Chloe decided to nip home for an hour before evening surgery. She had never intended to move back to Eastbury, but then she never intended to very nearly lose her life and the man she thought she would marry. When that had happened, throwing her life into turmoil, the pull of her childhood roots had seemed the answer to her crisis, and as if by magic everything had slipped into place. A new GP was needed at Eastbury Surgery, and Pocket House, an end-of-terrace cottage facing the village green, came on the market. It was a stone's throw from her parents, as well as her closest friends Dan and Sally. Thankfully, nobody had dared utter the words, "It's meant to be." Had they done so, Chloe might have been tempted to give them a lethal injection. And by Easter 2005, almost 4 months after surviving one of the world's worst natural disasters, she'd moved from Nottingham back to Cheshire, and her life had taken on a degree of normality again. As had Dan's and Sally's lives, for they, on holiday with Chloe and Paul, had also been caught up in the disaster that would forever be known as the Boxing Day tsunami. With only 45 minutes before she had to be back at work for evening surgery, she made herself a cup of coffee and checked her answer phone. The message was from... Chloe put down her cup of coffee and backed away from the machine, as if it was about to explode. Hearing that voice, his voice, her insides churned. Time was, the churning would have been with lust and desire for him. Not now. "Hi, Chloe, it's Paul. Yes, I know, this is probably the last voice on earth you expected to hear again. The thing is..." The sound of rustling and the throat being cleared filled the kitchen. "Oh, well, I didn't think it would be so hard to do this. Look, what I want to say is... More throat clearing. I don't suppose there's any chance we could get together for a chat, could we? It would be a place and time to suit you. I'll leave that entirely for you to decide. You can contact me on my mobile. My number is..." But Paul, that man, that snake in the grass, as her mother had renamed him, had taken so long with his message, he'd run out of space on her machine. He hadn't rung back to give her the number either. He'd probably assumed that she'd received his message in full. Which she had, loud and very clearly, exactly 3 weeks after they had flown home to Nottingham, after that disastrous holiday on Phuket. Off work, with her leg in plaster and a fractured collarbone and numerous cuts and bruises, he'd announced that he didn't love her anymore.
"Surviving the tsunami has brought it home to me that we only get one chance in this life," he'd said.
He'd gone on to give her every other possible cliché about there being no dress rehearsal, that this life was the only one on offer, and that if there was a chance of happiness, one had to grab it with both hands. He'd even said that one day she would thank him for having the courage to leave her. It turned out he'd been having an affair for goodness knows how long, and coming so close to his own demise had sharpened his focus and helped him to make up his mind who he really wanted to be with. From then on, Paul Stratton, one-time prospective son-in-law to Jennifer and Graham Hennessy, became known as that man, that snake in the grass. Now, 3 years and 2 months later, he wanted to get together for a drink and a chat. Did he really think she'd agree to meet him? It was hair-washing night at Corner Cottage. Neither Dan nor his son Marcus enjoyed the experience. Marcus hated getting the soapy water in his eyes, and Dan hated to see his son cry. Marcus screwed his eyes up.
"Cold,"
he squealed, as the water cascaded over his baby-soft hair, washing away the soapy bubbles.
"Cold, cold, cold!"
"That's because we took so long. Sorry."
"Mr. Squeaky, Mr. Squeaky!"
Dan reached for the flannel.
Called Mr. Squeaky because he had once made a squeaky noise with it when he wrung it out,
and gave it to Marcus, who covered his eyes with it. Dan refilled the watering can and rinsed away the last remaining bubbles.
"Job done, buddy,"
Dan said with a salute.
"Another dangerous mission accomplished. Tomorrow we airlift in backup troops and form an assault on your toenails. It's hazardous work, but we're a crack team and more than up for it."
With his hair plastered wet and shiny against his scalp, giving him an oddly wise and noble appearance, Marcus looked doubtfully at his toes. He then smiled and offered the flannel to Dan.
"Make him squeak!"
Dan happily obliged, and then suggested it was time to pull out the plug. Marcus scrambled to his feet. Ever since he'd made the mistake of sitting over the plug hole...